I want to talk a little bit this morning about a friend of Jim and I. His name is Ray. Y'all have heard me talk about Ray before. As a matter of fact, some of you have met him. Ray dropped by our house last year, one of the nights when we're having, remember those dinners for eight that we had and we're getting ready for the vision thing? Ray happened to drop by. Some of you met him, and some of you even contributed a little cash to whatever emergency that he had going on at that particular time in his life. Because Ray has lots of emergencies in his life. Fortunately, most of them can be solved with $25. That's kind of Ray's magic number. $25 will pay the light bill, will pay the water bill, will pay the rent. Ray, he drops by our house every now and then. You know, not every day by any means, but, you know, every now and then. Sometimes he just wants something to eat. He'll say, "You cooking?" If I say no, he'll go, I don't know a lot about him, except that he's alone. I know that. He's very much alone. His mother, whose name was Mary, died probably, I think it was about 7 years ago. And I believe that he lived with her up until the time of her death, because he told me that he would always get up in the morning and make her a cup of coffee and take it to her. I think he loved his mother a lot, and now she's gone. There are children somewhere, but they seem to only be available to him or come looking for him when they have emergencies of their own. You know, you can imagine what kind of life this is. Ray's not a winner if you look at him by the world standards. He is a product of a special education in school. Jane is here today, and she has taken a special interest in Ray because she teaches special ed kids, and to see how they live when they're 55 years old compared to when they're in school was something that meant a lot to her to be able to see. He tries so hard. I mean, he knows that his reading skills are really limited. He knows that his reasoning skills are really limited. And when it comes to managing money, Lord knows he knows that he needs some help. We all know that. But he tries hard to keep himself in check. He's been working at the same place for 4 years, which speaks well for him. It really does. He tries. And so Jim and I love Ray. We just love him. Jim says, "We can claim him on our income tax. We can do it." He drives us crazy, and we probably drive him crazy. But we love each other. There's this resilience and this strength in him that I don't know if I can muster. You know, he usually rides a bike. When he doesn't have a bike to ride, he walks to work every day, whether it's raining, cold, hot, whatever it is. He's like the Energizer Buddy. He just keeps on going. But this last week, he really did have an emergency. He really did need some help. And it would take me the whole time allotted for the sermon to try to explain to you what Ray explained to me about all this, so I'm not even going to try to do that. But I will tell you that he is in danger of being kicked out of government housing. His little apartment that he has is fortunate enough to have. Because he borrowed $20 from some guy and told him to pay him back $40. And on Wednesday, but the guy came beating on his door in the middle of the night saying, "I need my money and I need it right now." And the way that the system works, according to Ray, is that if you get put on probation, in this case, it was disturbing the peace of your neighbors in the middle of the night and some guy banging on your door, you'd get locked out of your apartment until they had kind of gone through it and decided what they were going to do with you. So Ray didn't have anywhere to go. He didn't know where he was going to stay. He had stayed on the street before, and he hated it. He told me the whole story of what it was like to get up in the morning and not be able to take a shower, not be able to put on dry, clean clothes, and have to go to work with the clothes you had slept in, and how horrible that was. So he did not want to do that. So he came to us this last week really distressed and worried and confused. He didn't know where he was going to live for the next several nights. So this was one of the times that we helped. So I was driving him to the motel where he'd gotten a room. And he was telling me, He said, I've been praying to Jesus about this mess of my life. He said, I've been praying and trying to hear an answer. He said, I've been reading the Bible. And I thought to myself, isn't that when we usually do that same thing? We pray and read and talk to God when we're in the biggest amount of trouble. And then he said something that took me off guard. He said, Miss Martha, is there really a city called Jerusalem? And I said, well, yeah, there is, right? I've been there. It's a beautiful city. And then he thought for a minute. And he said, then, did Jesus really walk on this earth? This very same earth where you and I walk, did he really, really walk here? And I said, yes, right. He really walked here. He really lived here. I said, some of the places that I went to in Jerusalem, I walked on roads, marble-covered roads that Jesus would have definitely walked on. He would have gone up the steps to the temple. Jesus really lived here. And we couldn't finish the conversation because we were pulling into the parking lot of the motel. But he sat there for just a second. And then as he was getting out of the car, I saw him just kind of look around. And he said, my, oh my. See, Ray could pray when he was in trouble. I mean, you know, he knew how to say those words. He knew how to do what he was supposed to do. He could talk to King Jesus up there in the sky and say, help me. He had learned how to do that. He could understand the risen Christ who ascended into heaven, the one who he was asking to save him. But what he could not seem to grasp was the Jesus who lived and walked on this earth. You know, just Jesus in the midst of us. The Jesus who loved and who laughed and loved to eat a good meal and healed us and made us whole and worked and got tired and sat down to eat with his friends. The Jesus who taught us how to love one another. It is something, isn't it, when you think about it? I mean, it really is something. Sometimes we, in the trade, as we call, you know, we don't think about it as much as someone else might. That this Jesus, the Son of God, actually walks on the earth. Now, see, I think Peter had the same thing going on as Ray did in the scripture that Daryl so beautifully read for us this morning. He reminded you about last week. Remember, Jesus came to his disciples and said, who do you say that I am? And Peter knew the answer immediately. You are the Son of God. You are Messiah. You are Messiah. Powerful you are. You can save us. You can save us from Rome. You can save us from the life that we live. You can bring things back the way that they were before. He could see that Jesus. He could see that Jesus that was doing the things that he wanted him to do that would help him to feel good about his life. He got that Jesus, that forever Jesus. But what he wasn't able to fathom was that even though he had been taught this about the Messiah for so long, maybe he got it wrong. Maybe this Messiah thing might be something different from what he thought. Might be someone who would undergo great suffering. Suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes. And maybe he would be a Messiah who would be killed. And then there was something about the third day, but Peter didn't even hear that because he wasn't listening anymore because he was getting mad is what was happening to him. He couldn't stand this kind of talk that Jesus was giving him. And so this rock star, Peter, on whom Jesus said the church would be built, started getting on to Jesus. He started fussing at him. And he said, you better not ever let me hear you say that again. How many times have you all heard your mother say, you never say that again. This step would never happen to you. You are above that, Jesus, said Peter. Didn't take long. Just a split second, Peter went from rock star to the one who was the holder of the keys for the kingdom. He went from being a rock to being a stumbling block. Man, just like that, at the drop of a hat. By putting Jesus so high up there that nobody could reach him, he got into big hot water. So Peter went from being Jesus' number one man to being who? Satan. And Jesus said, don't even walk next to me. I don't even want to see you out of the corner of my eye. You walk behind me. Get away from me. Just get out of my sight. I can't deal with you. So now Jesus realizes that it's time for him to redirect them, his disciples, to refocus their mission, to tell them without a doubt what they had gotten themselves into. And we need to hear this too, y'all. We need to hear what we've gotten ourselves into. And he said it like this. He said, those who want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake will find it. If they want to be with me, let them take up their cross and follow. And there's no doubt that he could have gone on to say, the way is never easy. It's confusing. It's like I used to say about politics. It's like Alice in Wonderland. Up is down and down is up. And when you really get into it, what you once thought was your power becomes only your weakness. But that's not the end of it. Because weakness becomes love. And love is the most powerful thing in the world. So if you want to save your life, you got to lose it. That's Jesus' talk. Y'all know that I traveled to El Salvador several times. Tommy and Nikki went on all those trips that I went on. And there's one particular trip that I remember. I think I've talked to y'all about this before, but it's a story that is a part of my life, and so I like to share it as often as I can. I was on a trip, and something just happened to me. I came back a little bit different than I had been when I went. It was a moment when I found myself in this holy place, and I felt as if I was being changed. The work week was over. We'd done our work. We worked in a town called the Watch Pond. Don't remember what we were doing on this particular trip, but we had packed our bags and we were on our way to the airport on the bus. But we had some extra time, so we were going to do a little sightseeing. And we found ourselves in San Salvador, which is about 40 miles away from the town where we were working. San Salvador is the capital of El Salvador, the capital city, probably in the urban area. There are maybe almost 2 million people. So it's a big city. You know, it's a nice city. It's really, really nice. The bus left us off, and I found myself in the Chapel of the Divine Providence. It was a lovely building, I remember. It was in this little community. It was a tree-lined community, kind of half residential and half little stores and things with trees lining the street. And the chapel itself was made of this beautiful wooden beams shaped in beautiful shapes. It was just an unusual looking chapel. I'd already learned some things about one of the priests who had been there at that chapel, Oscar Romero. Now you may recognize his name because you may have covered Oscar Romero in a history class at some time in your life. So his name might be familiar to you. Father Romero came to the Chapel of the Divine Providence in the 1970s. And this was a time when the country of El Salvador was one heck of a mess. I mean, it was just corrupt and terrible. It's bad now. There are a lot of gangs and the murder rate is high, and a lot of people fear for their lives there. But then it was even worse because it was all, the government was so corrupted. And so San Salvador set in the middle, the government set in San Salvador, and so the city of San Salvador was sort of caught up in the life of the government there. And most of the people who were, gotten their way into government were there for one reason and one reason only. And that was just to see how much money they could filter down through the government to their own pockets. It was to see how much power they could yield for themselves. That was the only reason. They surely didn't care about the people, because the average people who had been just sort of middle class like we are, all of a sudden found themselves living in poverty. And they were living on those tree-lined streets, and they were looked on by the government as of no value. I mean, it was just, let's just ignore them. There's nothing we can do to deal with them, just ignore them. And so their lives became harder and harder. And when they protested the injustice that had come their way, they certainly weren't listened to. They weren't given a fair trial or a fair voice in court. They were simply beaten and put in prison and left to die. So, you know, the question is, how does a priest, a preacher, somebody who preaches the gospel, how do you live in a neighborhood like that? How do you lead a flock in conditions like that, all that injustice? Well, up until Father Romero, what the priest did was just mind their own business, you know. They would preach sweet little sermons about going to heaven one day and just hanging in there. Never mention that Jesus was an advocate of poor people, that Jesus was an advocate of seeking justice for those who were experiencing injustice. Never rocking the boat, never encouraging them to stand up for themselves. Romero himself did this for a year or two. He tried to just follow the status quo and do what those who had gone before him did. He lied to himself, kept his nose clean, as they say. He must have been pretty miserable. Then one day he heard about the cold-blooded murder by the El Salvadoran government of a rural priest who he had gone to seminary with. And you know how they say that was the straw that broke the camel's back? Well, so it was for him. That was all he could take. This priest had been helping poor people, encouraging them to protest, to stand up for their rights. And when Romero heard about that murder, something inside him broke. And for all the times that he had neglected preaching the truth of the gospel, telling the old story so that all could hear, he started shouting it from the rooftops. Every Sunday and two or three times on the radio during the week, he talked about the plight of the poor and the oppressed and how Jesus lifted them up and loved them. And he called for the church to become the voice of those whose voices had been stopped up. If you Google Oscar Romero, one of his most famous quotes is this: "The ones who have a voice must speak for those who are voiceless." And another is, "Let us not tire of preaching love. It is the force that will overcome the world." Preaching those things is not easy, because what you get from some is, "I heard all that stuff, but that's not the way it works in my world." Or, if you are a government person, you might very quickly consider Romero a thorn in the side of El Salvador. So I was sitting on this pew directly underneath the pulpit. It was an elevated pulpit, you know, set up on a thing, and the priest would have, you know, stood up and looked down. You could see where the hands had worn the sides, like this one. And I was sitting there looking at that pulpit where Oscar Romero would have been standing celebrating Mass on March 24th, 1980. They had communion every Sunday in the Catholic Church, so as he raised the bread and wine and he proclaimed, "This is my body given for you," This is my blood shed for you. As he said those words, a single shot was fired. Romero collapsed, his heart pierced by an assassin's bullet. I don't know. It's hard. Jesus says those who want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake will find it. And somehow we're all in it together. We're all mixed up together, all looking, all seeking, all living ourselves in this salvation journey toward the fulfillment of the kingdom of God and just trying to do our best. So we're going to come to this table in just a minute. And I think coming to this table has everything to do with what we just talked about. Because this sacrament, this is a place where Jesus in the church is open to us in a way that it's not open at any other time. This is when Jesus hosts the meal and welcomes us, and yet we all come together and welcome one another. And here's what I think. Even though we won't see them, I think Father Oscar Romero is going to be kneeling at this altar. I think the man who fired the bullet that shot him is going to be kneeling at this altar. And I know Ray is going to be kneeling at this altar. All together, walking together, breathing the same air, watching the same blue moon up in the sky, hearing the same birds sing. Walking on the same grass, living together in God's creation, all of us just the same. And to every one of us, Jesus says, just grab your cross, whatever it is that you've been given, whatever your life is about, whoever you are, whatever it is that you're passionate about, what you love, what you want, how you walk, just grab that up, whatever it is, and follow me. Jesus would say, you are miracles. Every one of you in your own way, you are a miracle. And I love you. And I invite you to this table to receive that love. And I invite you and challenge you and want you to go out into the world and do one thing. And one thing only, not come to church, not be an officer in the church, not give a lot of money, not do this, not do that. One thing only, love one another as I love you. My, oh my.